So hello, welcome to another Pharmacy in Practice podcast. We've got a Scottish pharmacist, superintendent, community pharmacist with us today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. My name's Phil Gault. I'm currently a superintendent pharmacist and managing director at Lindsay and Gilmore Pharmacy based in Edinburgh.
Scotland's favourite community pharmacy?
Absolutely.
Other pharmacies are available. So what, tell us about your, because you're a superintendent pharmacist, you're managing director, you've got a lot of responsibility, Phil. How have you got to here in your career so far?
So yeah, Jonathan, I mean, it's been an interesting path, I guess. I mean, I actually qualified in pharmacy in South Africa way back in 1994, and then came back to the UK in 1998. I'm originally from Greenock in Scotland, but obviously my accent has been morphed, having spent nearly 17 years or so in South Africa. When I came back to the UK, I did my pre-reg or another pre-registration with Rowlands. I was based down in Ellesmere in Shropshire, and then moved over to Lloyd's Pharmacy in 1999, having obviously completed my pre-reg, and then did a bit of a kind of up the management ladder, if you like, with Lloyd's very, very quickly, moved to district manager, which is a kind of field management type role. And then finally ended up as an area manager in 2002 with Lloyd's. I kind of joined the independent sector, I guess you could call it, in 2004, when I went to work for Peter Cattee's company called PCT Healthcare as an area manager. And then in 2006, I joined a very small group in Staffordshire called Cornwell's Chemists. I was the superintendent there up until August of 2014, when I joined Lindsay and Gilmore as the MD and the superintendent.
Very good. So, I'm intrigued by the South Africa connection. I must admit, I didn't know that, Phil. So what's pharmacy like out there?
Pharmacy, I guess, is probably similar to Australia. It's driven very much by health insurance companies. So even back then, our computer systems were quite advanced, because they were able to process claims for up to 250 different schemes. And each scheme had essentially a blacklist and a whitelist. So, but that was processed at the time of submitting the prescription. So I would also say that the use of OTC meds was quite advanced, in the sense there was quite a lot of stuff that you could get over the counter in South Africa that would probably, we would not get it in the UK. So the retail, or the kind of that side of the OTC side of pharmacy in South Africa is still quite big. Lots of private services. My pharmacy we were doing vaccinations, pharmacotherapy services way back then, and that was the late 1990s. It's an interesting place. You certainly see quite a lot of I would say conditions that you probably wouldn't see in a pharmacy in Scotland.
I mean, yeah, is that good or bad conditions, do you think?
It can be good or bad, but no, I mean, I think certainly back when I was in South Africa, the pharmacy contract was still very much independence, you know, small groups of pharmacies, and but I do believe that recently there's been some changes, so there's a bit more multiple ownership.
Okay. Now I'm banging on about, you know, Team Scotland and pharmacy up here, and how I think community pharmacy is way ahead of the game up here. And I know we'll come on to speak about a few of those things, but what, and because the reason I ask this question is because you've worked in England as well, haven't you? So go and tell us what you reckon the difference between England and Scotland is at the moment in terms of community pharmacy.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously I'm fortunate in that having spent quite a lot of time, the vast majority of my practice has been in England, obviously involved in pharmacy, both as an employee, if you like, but also involved in sort of the representative nature. So I was on the board of AIM when I was from about 2007 right up until when I came back to Scotland, and had obviously, you know, seen the kind of the political side and the representative side of pharmacy in England. But when I sort of compare that to how pharmacy is in Scotland, I would say that Scotland are far, far and away ahead in terms of how they utilise pharmacy, the relationship that Scottish Government has with pharmacy, certainly through Community Pharmacy Scotland, has been fundamental, I believe, to the success of pharmacy in Scotland, in that Scottish Government clearly benefit value the contribution that community pharmacy can make to improving the health outcomes of the wider population of Scotland. Whereas if you compare that to England, Westminster really don't care. They see pharmacy more as a cost than anything else, and that's evident by the what they've been doing recently to try and, you know, drive down the cost and reduce the essentially the number of pharmacies in England. So it's desperately sad in England, but we're lucky and we're fortunate in Scotland that we have a brilliant pharmacy network. We have a negotiating body that is working hard for community pharmacy in Scotland. We have a pharmacy contract that benefits everyone, you know, the taxpayer, the patients that come into our pharmacies, the contractors that own and operate these pharmacies, the pharmacists who work in these pharmacies. You know, we're giving them lots of professional responsibility. There's a contract that enables them to really demonstrate their wide clinical skills. So I think we're in a fantastic space in Scotland, and, you know, certainly we feel very proud to be working in Scotland as part of that.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think I would, you know, probably like to frame all our conversations around that and say something like, you know, I agree basically, but any of the services that we come on to talk about, it's about them being even better. Yeah. Rather than you know, I hope it doesn't come across as a criticism at all if we delve into them. It's not the case. I mean, we are miles ahead in my view. I totally agree with you. I mean, one thing that's not talked about a lot is, and I've mentioned that a few times recently, is registration of patients. You know, that notion of gradually starting to, I mean, we're not there yet, but gradually starting to take patients away, you know, or sorry, contractors away from chasing volume of prescriptions. Obviously, that can't be done overnight. Obviously, it has to be a gradual, orderly process. And there may always, you know, hopefully there always will be a supply fee and stuff like that. But I just think, and I'm in complete agreement, that the goodwill within the pharmacy network is staggering. And it just pains me to see what's happening in England. I mean, if you just take a really simple, boring, non-clinical example, I'm thinking of, and I'm not alone when I give this example. I mean, I used to run a rural community pharmacy for a multiple, and I would often be out round the country delivering prescriptions to folk. Now, some of the old folk I came across, I'm convinced I was the only person they saw that week. You know, and you can't, I don't think you can, I know, and I'm not on my own on that. Lots of folk do that, and they are, you know, and within the network, lots of folk go above and beyond. But that, like, non-clinical work or pastoral or social work,
yeah,
it's just really hard to measure. And it's just been completely dismissed, and I find it really frustrating. But
I mean, I suppose the important thing is that, yes, it's desperately sad what's happening in England, but I think we just have to remind ourselves and really make sure that people understand and government continue to support pharmacy going forward in Scotland, regardless of what's happening in any other part of the country. I just think we have we've got a great pharmacy network in Scotland, and we've got great teams out there that are doing really, really good work, in all of the pharmacies in all the locations that they practice. And I think it's really important that we don't lose sight of that.
What do you think of the minor ailments scheme up here?
I think it's fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And in England, we had postcode prescribing, essentially, where you would have services that were depending on where you were. In Scotland, we've got a national minor ailment service, and I'm delighted to see the extension of that this year in April, where it's going to be widened out to everyone. And obviously, the further extension of the conditions that are able to be treated under minor ailments, I think, is going to go a long way to, you know, reducing the pressures on GP practices and making sure that, you know, pharmacy is essentially the first port of call for the treatment of common clinical conditions.
Mm-hmm. I think the service stands up on its own, but I do think as well it's like a gateway. You know, it's set a precedent around things like, there's things like, you know, I know you're not prescribing specifically, but you're supplying and dispensing on the same premises. And when we've broken that taboo now, you know, and we've found that it can be done very appropriately.
Yeah.
And also, again, the registration piece. So you're not, you know, you're almost disincentivized from overprescribing, isn't it, on the minor ailment scheme? So be really interesting to see where it goes next.
I think the challenge, really, certainly from our perspective, is how it's going to work, how it's going to be managed, because obviously we're moving away from a registration model to an activity based model, which I think is absolutely the right way forward. But I suppose I'm just keen to see the detail of it from an operational perspective. I think it'll be good for everyone in future, but it's just really at this stage, it's, well, what does that look like?
So is that sounds a bit more like, I know the QAF is much maligned. Does that sound more like the GP QAF system?
Well, certainly from what I've heard, is there's some element where they believe that it will be an activity-based service. So if a patient comes in and you see them and you refer them, you know, self-care, or there might be a payment or a attributed to that. Whereas if it's a more involved consultation, you know, maybe for a UTI or that specific, then that would, because there's more detail, there's obviously more time, then that would be classed as maybe 4 points worth of pharmacist interaction, as opposed to 1 point for, you know, just advice and self-care. And it's really how that always captured with the PMR and the PCR and the kind of the mechanisms for that. But I think the change is good, because I think there's certainly making patients aware of the service has been a challenge in the past, because we're quite restricted on how we do that. I also think that, you know, the who's eligible and who's not, and currently that's a bit difficult to explain to people because of the fact that we've had free prescriptions in Scotland for ever, more or less. So I think it will be good that it's much simpler for patients to understand, and I certainly think it will be beneficial for everyone.
You know what I love about it, the fact that EMAS or minor ailments is a product, isn't it? And there's nothing wrong with that. And the thing that I find really encouraging is I think this concept of pharmacy first is actually cutting through to the mainstream. You know, we're very good in pharmacy about talking to ourselves about how brilliant we are, but never taking stuff to the market, you know?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of credit goes there to, dare I say it, Harry McQuillan et al. At CPS. I mean, they're doing really well. And also the Scottish Government vision as well, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things I always, when we talk about pharmacies, that we're very good at hiding in plain sight. You know, we're there, but people don't really see us. So so hopefully we will start to see some movement on that and some changes to people becoming more aware of what pharmacy services are available on their doorsteps. So
true. Sherlock Holmes did say that that's the best place to hide, though, isn't it?
Absolutely.
What about, right, moving on, what about CMS? Now, I shouldn't bias your answer, of course, but I'm not so universally positive about this, but I'm intrigued to know what you think. So has the chronic medication service exceeded your expectations, Phil?
Well, I think I'm fortunate, because obviously I didn't really have any expectations to start with. I mean, when I came up to Scotland, I looked at CMS and thought, well, this looks a little bit like the Medicines Use Reviews and the New Medicine Service kind of all rolled into one type thing. So I think it's probably, I mean, I'm not sure it's been a roaring success. I think the intention is good. The direction of travel is really encouraging. And I think really, like with this relaunch that we're going to see in the pharmacotherapy service, I think it's got the potential to be even better. But even in the core CMS service as it stands, I mean, things like the kind of high risk medicines reviews and stuff are absolutely essential. So I do think it does work, but could do better, and I think that's really what has been kind of brought out in this relaunch of the new service when it comes out, which I think is supposed to be sometime this year as well.
I think some clever. I agree with you. I think some clever marketing person perhaps needs to come up with the pharmacy first equivalent for CMS, don't they? I think that would be really helpful.
I think they're calling it Medicines Care and Review or something. That's the new name for it. So it's,
that sounds nice. Yeah.
But anyway, so it's, I think, historically it's delivered, but I think that it potentially is a missed opportunity because it's a very, very complicated in the sense that, you know, for the serial prescriptions, you have to get GP buy-in, and some GPs are less keen to get involved than others. I mean, in our pharmacy group, we've had a few pharmacies that are even now are doing really well on the serial prescriptions, and it helps both the practices, but also, you know, in terms of planning a workload in the pharmacies, it's good as long as you have a kind of critical mass of patients on the service.
So next, community pharmacy independent prescribing.
Yeah,
I'm intrigued to know what your view as a contractor is. Do you welcome it?
I think I do, but I mean, what I would say is, though, I don't share the view that every pharmacist should be a prescriber. I think independent prescribing is great, but we also need to make sure that we facilitate this, because it's all very well. I mean, having the development recently where we're looking at, you know, courses that are specific for community pharmacy, so independent prescribing designed for community pharmacy, so actually in community pharmacies is a good thing. But there's a risk there that if we actually get all these people trained up to be independent prescribers, there's nothing for them to do. And that's my concern, because I think that's then a waste of resource and the skill. So although I think it's a great thing, I'm not convinced that we should have every person, every pharmacist should be an independent prescriber. It's very much, you know, the use of skill mix. But what I would say is that I have a bit of a bugbear about this kind of clinical pharmacist thing, and clinical pharmacy. Community pharmacies do great clinical work all the time, and I think we need to get away from that. And certainly with some stuff recently in England where there was some diet, you know, the message was very much, well, you know, clinical pharmacists are not in community pharmacy. Well, that's absolutely not right. So I would say, and I think the issue with the whole independent prescribing thing is it can potentially kind of further that division. But that's why we need to have the opportunity for independent prescribers to actually practice in the pharmacies where they are. And that's really where we should have our pharmacists in the pharmacies in the locations in the communities where they're best placed to meet the needs of the patients.
Mm-hmm. It's a complex area, isn't it? You know, it's there's a lot of, you know, governance doesn't really cover it, to be honest. There's a lot of risk, and a lot of risk, I think, that as sort of traditional pharmacists, we're not overly used to.
Yeah.
I mean, once you start looking at the record, for example, the patient record, all sorts of, you can't unsee stuff, you know, there's all manner of consequences to the decisions you make. Are you making a diagnosis? Have you accidentally made a diagnosis?
Yeah.
Are you prescribing for an undifferentiated diagnosis? Yeah. Is there no diagnosis? Are you still prescribing? It is a bit of a minefield, but, you know, and personally overall, I'm really, you know, as a pharmacist prescriber myself, I'm all for it, but I do recognize that it's a huge take on, and one of the interesting things for as a contractor, I mean, where does the responsibility sit? You know, if someone makes a prescribing error on your premises, do you have a certain amount of liability as the superintendent? I'm just not sure, and I'm not sure that's been tested very much yet.
Yeah, and I think certainly I would see that the movement of community pharmacists into GP practice is probably one of the biggest threats at the moment for the sector. And how do we kind of get that right? But as I say, my view is that we should have, you know, these independent prescribers in the communities, you know, not sitting in GP practices. I mean, there is a role for those types of pharmacists, but I think currently the way that the direction of travel is very much to get pharmacists into GP practices, which I don't agree with.
Well, I've said this view before. I think pharmacists should be working in pharmacies.
Yeah.
Whether they're prescribing or not.
Yeah.
However, I have to declare that I'm working in GP practice, so total total hypocrite, but but within that, the experience has been absolutely invaluable. So so what I've experienced has been taken under the wing of a training practice. Very organized practice, very forward thinking. Used to training junior doctors up, and although my training hasn't been the same, I'm sure there are sort of similar overlap areas. I've also had something that I wonder how, I mean, I wonder how we'll deliver this in community pharmacy, you know, like the clinical supervision, because doing the prescribing course is just a start. That's just like, it's like buying the wheels for the car, you know. Buying the car involves lots of months and probably years of clinical supervision by a medical or maybe a non-medical prescriber who knows their, basically knows their onions. And they're also managing the risk around that person. I'm not sure if we're yet.
I would say that certainly, obviously, there's a the threat there about, you know, the movement of pharmacists in, but I do think it's an opportunity for us as well, if we get it right. But it needs to, you know, I think it seems to be quite rushed at the moment. It's like, you know, kind of right, okay, we're going to have all these pharmacists in GP practices. That's all great, but where are they coming from? And so I think it needs to be managed, if you like. And I do think that the first step of having a specific course that is targeted at community pharmacists with the intention of actually having them in a community pharmacy is a good thing. I mean, there's other stuff. I mean, I think certainly in terms of the pharmacy in Scotland, I would say there's loads of stuff that's going on that is great for us. I mean, and certainly we've had massive investments in technology and what we're doing across the whole of the sector. The vaccine transformation program that's coming, or hopefully will come down the line and obviously get vaccines into pharmacies and take a bit of the pressure off the managed service. I mean, one of the other things that we were sort of was looking at that's I guess is quite interesting is in Forth Valley we've got a situation where discharge summaries are being emailed via the pharmacy care record, which is absolutely fantastic, and I think that would be a great thing if we could get that rolled out, you know, across every health board, not just Forth Valley. And I think there's some other good stuff that's happening in, you know, certainly in other parts of the country that kind of ties in with that. The Welsh have got a discharge medicine review, which has been going on for a while, and that seems to be working quite well, because I think we need to have it more tied up where, you know, if patients are coming out of hospital and into pharmacy, into the community, we need to know so that we can help to better support them.
Absolutely. The discharge thing's really been a bit of a revelation to me. I mean, the risk around transferring folk from hospital to community is quite large, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think the evidence backs that up, but having those discharge conversations and paperwork in the community pharmacy would seem like home territory for community pharmacy. And the other thing that's, I think, has been quite underreported is what you mentioned quite rightly about the vaccine transformation program in Scotland. Yeah. My understanding is that basically all vaccines, correct me if I'm wrong, all vaccines are coming out of general practice. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, certainly we are not able to do any NHS vaccination services in pharmacy until they change the law. So that's what CPS have been lobbying Scottish Government for. So it looks like we are quite close to that now. So we it shouldn't be too long before we actually see vaccination services in pharmacy.
So I've been qualified 10 years. I'm a prescriber. I've worked in community. And I run my own business. And now I work in GP practice. So in terms of business opportunities for pharmacists like me, one thing I often ponder is why are there no startup community pharmacies?
I mean, it's an interesting one, though, but I think part of it could be that as a sector, as an industry, we are quite traditional, if you like, and quite change averse. So I don't think the nature of the contract, because it's a commercial arrangement, if you like, is that we don't tend to see as much of that sharing. And, you know, pharmacy companies generally will not help any other pharmacy companies because it's about commercial competitive advantage. So I feel that possibly there's an element where why would I help a competitor or a potential competitor to you know, deliver a business or to create a business. And I think that might be the real issue around that. I mean, what I have found, and certainly in the work that I've done, certainly in the sector, is that having been involved in things like AIM, and obviously an organization called the ICCA, which is the Independent Company Chemist Alliance, which is essentially like a networking organization that represents pharmacy owners from across the UK, not just England, but Scotland and Northern Ireland and Wales, is where, if you're looking for a startup community, I think that is probably as close to a startup community that you would get in pharmacy, because in that organization there is information sharing. It's about best practice. It's about how do we make community pharmacy the best for everyone, for the patients, for the pharmacy businesses, and that has worked very, very well. And I've been involved with the ICCA since back in 2006, and I'm delighted that I actually was recently appointed as vice chair of the ICCA. So, amongst the other things I do, I'm obviously now vice chair of the ICCA. So I would say, as a startup community, that's the place where that would happen, and those discussions would take place, and advice would be exchanged.
I just want, it's an interesting one, because I see the NHS as just one customer of community pharmacy. You know, traditionally it has been a pretty hefty customer, let's be honest. But it should be seen as one customer. I think it's a mindset thing. You know, you can quite easily register a note. I'm not trying to make competition for you here, by the way, Phil. But, you know, you could conceivably register a non-contract community pharmacy and start delivering services. I mean, there's lots and lots now of viable, private, very useful community pharmacy services. Yeah. I'm thinking of the travel thing. You know,
Travel. I'm sure you guys. Travel medicines is a big sector. It's certainly growing. And I'd agree. I mean, I think there's certainly opportunities, but most people's attention, I guess, is focused on the kind of the traditional pharmacy model. About, you know, it's about the level of funding, I suppose, because to make a non contract pharmacy viable, you would need a significant amount of income. So I think that's probably been one of the challenges, and why it's perhaps not developed as much as it possibly could have.
You're involved in quite a lot of extracurricular activities, aren't you? You're a busy man.
I'm a busy man.
Keen to give back to pharmacy, aren't you? So what all are you involved in?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly, you know, apart from sort of the day job, if you like, I'm very keen to kind of contribute to the wider sector, and have been involved in many organisations over the years. And certainly having come to Scotland, I've been, was elected to chair of Community Pharmacy Lothian in 2016. And then last year, I was elected to the board of the National Pharmacy Association representing Scotland. And really that's to make sure that we bring a Scottish flavour to the MPA. And I think very often it's, you know, a lot of these organisations, really by the nature of the membership, in that there's many more pharmacies in England, they tend to be quite English centric. So it was useful to be able to bring a Scottish perspective and to share some of the great practice that goes on up here in Scotland. So I think that's you know, a really important part of what I see as my role is not just about running the pharmacy group, but obviously making sure that I'm contributing to the wider discussion.
One final question. Every single podcast I listen to these days seems to mention Brexit. So, and I can't, to be honest, I can't avoid it, because you're in business, and you know, there may be an effect with Brexit and so on. What do you have a view on that? Do you think Brexit will be good or bad for pharmacy?
So this week's view, because it's changing so fast. I mean, seriously, I think it's going to have it will have an impact on pharmacy more from a supply chain perspective. I think even now we're having big issues with shortages in supply. which is impacting on patients. And our pharmacies are, you know, every day are running around trying to source medicines for patients. So I think that's really, that has a potential to get much worse. So, I mean, I would just be keen that whatever happens, we get it done and we move on, because I think this lack of uncertainty is not great for anybody, and certainly for a business. It's you know, we are, you know, there's some decisions that we are kind of taking that are, you know, are being paused because we're not sure what's going to be happening next. But I think the biggest challenge really is going to be around the supply chain and how that's going to impact on patients. So I think our pharmacies will be the people that will be taking the hit for this. They'll be having to deal with patients, you know, who will be complaining because they can't get medicines. So it's, I think it's going to be very challenging.
I think I always try to add balance, so apologies if I offend anyone here, but I think the supply chain, I mean, I think Brexit is just, my own view is that Brexit is just one of many factors that affect the supply chain.
Yeah.
Some existing ones that I think should be mentioned are, you know,
absolutely.
Wholesaling by individual contractors. Let's not be in denial. That happens.
Yep.
You know, excessive reporting of drugs that are out of stock, that'll what that, you know, I can only assume what that'll do is create a spike in demand and negatively impact the supply chain, you know. So, and also I must you can't avoid mentioning certain companies that restrict supply to one wholesaler.
Yes.
For commercial reasons, you know.
Yep.
I mean, that
direct to pharmacy is a real issue. And I think there's, I think, you know, don't get me wrong, I think there'll be a lot of players in this, you know, suppliers and intermediates that will be absolutely using this as a to their commercial advantage. And they, you know, some of them may be driving the shortages because, you know, it's a commercial environment, and they might be stockpiling themselves on the basis that the prices will go up, and then they can make a quick buck, if you like. So I think there's, it's very complex, as you say, and there's many reasons why these things are there now, but ultimately we just need to make sure that we look after the needs of the patients, which is what we're supposed to, what our thing is, to make sure that we patients get medicines and we do the right thing for our patients.
Absolutely. I can only assume you've got a few pallets of baked beans under the bed, Phil.
Absolutely.
You're gonna pull them out and sell them back to Lidl.
Absolutely. Just one pallet of baked beans.
No, it's been really, really good speaking to you, and you know, really enjoyed it. I think your Lindsay and Gilmore are going from strength to strength, and
you're totally
buying into the Scottish contract and delivering it to the full. So it's all really positive. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Jonathan.
All the best.
All right. Cheers. Bye.